You're listening to the Assistants Together podcast. I'm Henrietta Barker, a London-based multi-sector recruiter and the host of the Assistants Together podcast, an interview series with industry leaders and assistants who share their knowledge, experience and stories with us. If you haven't connected with us on social media, then come and say hi. All the links are in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining me, Victoria. It's exciting to have you on the podcast.
Well, I'm really, really excited to be doing this, Hen, and thank you for asking me. It's a real honour. I can't wait to get stuck into our conversation today.
Yeah, I know. We've got some stuff to cover, I reckon. Victoria Ratton is the CEO and founder of the Executive and Personal Assistance Association. It is a not-for-profit professional body for executive assistants and business support professionals in the UK. Now, Victoria is a former award-winning EA with over 15 years experience across public and corporate sectors. And she is really passionate about the roles within executive and business support. And she does actively encourage it as a truly fantastic career choice. For nearly two decades, she's been actively involved in the executive and business support industry, and she's worked with EAs and PAs from across the world. She regularly presents at events and conferences and is a mentor and coach for assistants to help them truly excel in their role. Victoria's been a real driving force for many topics in our industry that other people haven't necessarily wanted to be vocal about or haven't been as consistent in the message. Is that how you have approached your career and what you've been doing? Have you said, these are the things that are important to me and to other people, and I'm going to be the person that broaches those topics?
Yeah, I think from my own career as an EA, I was really, really lucky, Hen. And when I was about 20, 21, and I'd already been in the secretarial profession, as it was called back then, since I was 16. And I had a really good trainer. Many of your listeners have probably heard of Susie Baron Stubley, who sadly passed away nearly 6 years ago. And she, I was kind of part of her first group cohort of PAs that she was training with her new firm, and she was an ex-EA. And she did this whole big piece with us around our own values and our own drivers in terms of being an executive assistant, which was a whole new ball game to me in comparison to what I'd learned in my secretarial diploma kind of 4 or 5 years prior to that. And there was, it was all with her about taking ownership of your own career and driving that forward, but also looking at the companies you were working for, the bosses, or sorry, directors, executives that you were looking to work for, and making sure that, you know, the values were meeting in the middle. I think she'd seen far too many unhappy EAs in their roles at the time, and she felt this was something that, you know, had to be looked at in earnest in order for EAs to really, really enjoy their careers. So as an EA, she gave me her training, her coaching, gave me my own voice, you know, to have that sense of professionalism, have that sense of ownership over my own career, and that only I could drive it forward and not to rely necessarily on the companies that I was working for. But, you know, I had to be the master of my own destiny. So she was a big driving force for me. It was just around that same time that I started, I was PA networking, and I was starting to run PA events in London. It's been a long, long time. It's been about 17 years since I set up my first networking event for EAs.
Our conversation today is not only about how Victoria started out in her career, the roles that have shaped and changed her, but how life's twists and turns can take you in unexpected but incredibly rewarding directions. Victoria is so open and frank about her life and experiences, not just her mentors and the people that she's worked with, but also about Not Just a Girl's Job, which is a campaign that was launched to bring awareness to the men who worked in our profession. Every single man I've interviewed on this podcast has mentioned it, and I wanted to talk to Victoria about why she launched it and what impact it's had on our industry. It was such a pleasure to speak with her about her career and EPA, and I know that you're going to enjoy hearing about her experiences.
I kind of realised some of the issues that I was encountering and some of what I felt about the role she was, that she was kind of talking to us about in the training courses. It was actually prevalent amongst a lot of PAs that I was networking with back then. I'm an accidental leader in this profession. I never set off to go and be a kind of voice. It just happens. But I think because of the confidence she gave me, and also the CEO I was working for at that time as well, who really, really did believe me, my voice kind of fell out and I started speaking up about issues within our own profession, getting the PAs together, trying to help provide a collective voice for everybody. But I never saw myself as leadership material, certainly not a voice for the PA profession, but somehow it just picked up speed and it just kind of snowballed. And then I was doing press articles and being interviewed, not just by the PA press, but in national newspapers and things like that. I put much of it down to Susie, but also Susan Scott Parker, who I was working for back then, as her EA. She took a chance and a punt on me, giving a 21-year-old a senior position, but she did. I did give her an offer. She couldn't refuse, I will have to say that.
What did you say?
Okay, so cliff notes of this story. I actually joined as the assistant to the executive assistant. And this is a disability charity. It's still going today. And it's funny, we'll come on to the male PAs, EAs, but the executive assistant was male, Chris. So I signed on to become his assistant. He left about a month, 6 weeks after me joining. And, like any CEO, she had a little bit of a panic and I just started covering the role. And I think in my heart of hearts, I wasn't quite sure if I was really ready for that really senior level. That's why I joined, to learn the ropes off Chris. But I just thought, to hell with it. Okay, I'm going to cover this role. So I carried on covering it, and HR and Susan were saying, we're going to get somebody in experience, we'll start the recruitment process off. But I, in my head, I was thinking, I could be the EA here. Let me just work really hard, prove myself, make up for the fact I don't have a degree. I am only 21, but I'm going to give it a bit of a pump. So I did, and it was working really, really well. And the whole organisation was shocked, to be fair. And so we had a discussion and I went in with a proposal to her. Ooh. And I said, Susan, here's an offer for you. It's up to you whether you take this, but this is my offer. It's working really well between us. Yes, I've still got things to learn. I'm happy to invest in myself to tighten up the areas I need to. But what I would like to go on a 6-month probation as your executive assistant. I would like to recruit somebody in a temporary contract capacity to be my assistant. And here's the thing, Susan, I'm willing to stay at the assistant to the EA salary for those 6 months. And if my probation is successful, I become your executive assistant and this is the salary that I would like and would expect. If it doesn't work out, I will go back to being the assistant to the EA. Thinking in my head at then, I'm never going back. I'm going upwards now. And she looked at me, I think she was really impressed. She certainly said she admired my kind of ballsy attitude. I went in there, it was kind of faking it a bit. I didn't feel massively confident, but I wanted the job so badly. I knew we were a good fit. I could feel it. Every vibe was telling me we were a good fit as CEO and EA. And it did work out. And after about 4 months, I said to her, we're having a cup of coffee. We often met up at 7 a.m. in the morning, have a coffee together, go through the day. And I said, look, Susan, is there any point in carrying on to the 6 months? Because this is working. I know this is working. Let's just go with it. And will you take me off probation now? And she did. And I ended up working there for nearly 5 years. And she was a fantastic CEO who took me on a massive journey. She opened up my entire working world she gave me some finesse. I was a bit rough around the edges because of the background I come from. And, you know, she was kind of meeting with people like Prince Charles and the CEOs of big banks. And I felt a little bit out of my depth. She actually supported and paid for me to continue having coaching with Susie. So we met up, all three of us. I still kind of reach out to her every now and again today because she was a massive part of my career. I remember speaking to Susie that ethics were really important to me in terms of the organisations I worked for. Now, obviously, it's a big thing now, isn't it, that people want to work for ethical.
Yeah.
But I wanted to... my values were all about making a difference as an EA in the companies that I worked for, and that they had good ethics. They were doing something for the greater good of the world. That was in my tiny little head back then. And, you know, I think going to work for disability charity, you know, obviously that did fit with what I was looking for, because it I wanted to spring out of bed every day and absolutely love the company and job that I was doing.
But the thing is that you were given the opportunities, but to me it sounds like you really ran with them.
Yeah, I did. And I was up in Scotland a couple of years ago, and some of the Scottish peers really challenged me. Come on, Vic, what were some of the drivers back then from a personal perspective? And some of them were, you know, 16, I move out of home, I'm paying rent and bills from 16, I became homeless at 18 for a really short period, I was on a park bench, I had a full-time secretarial role, but you know what rents were like back then, or even now, the disparity, you know, of your salary, which was actually a fairly okay salary back then, but the rent shooting up and the cost of living, I found myself on a park bench. I didn't tell my colleagues. I was embarrassed. They had no idea I was on that bench. But I did confide in one of them, and she was like, "You're coming to live with me." And she said, "This will help us both out." She was a struggling single mum and struggling to pay her rent as well. And she said, "Look, come and live with me for 6 months, pay some rent to me. We'll both get each other back."
Yeah,
honestly. So it was the fear of being homeless again, because you realise there was nobody to help you, nobody there. I was completely on my own looking at the stars thinking, how the hell did I get here? I had a really rough ride between 16 to about 20, you know, getting back on my feet again and then getting another flat and bedsits and all that kind of thing. So a big personal driver for me was, I've got to pay my bills. I cannot end up back on that park bench again. The fear's still there now. Yeah. You know, when you've been homeless, which, you know, a lot of people have experienced that fear never completely goes away, but it becomes a driver, and that driver becomes ambition. So it was, not only do I want to be a fantastic EA and work really hard and have a successful career, I want to be secure in personally as well, and secure for me was simply just having a roof over my head and being able to feed myself.
So you've met every opportunity head on in order to push through it, because the alternative was worse.
Yeah, it's always at the back of your head, you know, at the back of your mind. But here we are now with, you know, people going through what they're going through. But for me, that fear turned, as I said, turned into a driving force and amplified my ambition. And it wasn't about stepping on anyone else to get to where I wanted to go. I was literally just focused on my own journey initially, until I started PA networking. Right. And then it was the collective voice.
You mentioned that you'd started to do some speaking at events, and you started a networking event. Why did you begin that process? What was the sort of the feeling for you that you were looking for?
Because that was actually Susan's fault, in a way, bless her. So because of the nature of the companies we were dealing with at the forum, the disability forum, she said, "Vic, I need you to go over to KPMG and meet a couple of the PAs there that we deal with quite a lot. It's really important that you have a strong relationship with them." And I'd had no real networking experience at that time, but I went over there, you know, they took me out for lunch and we sat down and had a meeting. And then one of them, Madeline, said, "Vic, have you heard of an organisation called EUMA?" And I was like, "No, what's that?" The European Management Assistance, which is obviously now IMA. And she said, but you'll get to meet PAs from all different backgrounds and things like that. You know, membership £60 a year. This is what it's done for me. And she'd been a member for like 20 years or something at that point. So I went back to Susan. She was like, yeah, absolutely, I'm signing you up for that. This will be good for the charity as well. And you out networking. I'd never even heard of the concept PA networking. Yeah. And so I joined up to Yuma, and things then very snowballed very quickly. I went to my first meeting. I was the youngest there by quite far at that point, but they were working on had a piece of work on about encouraging the next generation of secretaries and PAs, people like me, to come into membership. Mm-hmm. And so I remember meeting the national chairman, who was from Manchester. She came down for a couple of events later and said, Vic, we're looking for a London chairperson to manage the London branch. Mm-hmm. We think you'd be a really, really good fit. And I was sat there thinking, what the hell? I'm literally about 22 years old at this point, 22, 23. And I found that I really loved networking very quickly. I mean, a lot of PAs still say to me, but Vic, it's all right for you. You're really confident. Well, I know, I just threw myself in at the deep end. And I genuinely found that I liked chatting to other PAs and I wanted to know more about them. So it just felt really natural to me. So I became the London chairman, and then suddenly found myself, you know, as part of a wider committee of UMA around the UK. But I set up my first networking event for them in London, and it had been a while since UMA had done a kind of really big event in London, a network. And I then had to do a pitch to the PAs in that audience about what I was going to be doing with UMA London. Mm-hmm. And what the plans were, and I was heckled by some of the PAs in the audience, and and they kind of, some of them said, look, this is lovely, but you're in your early 20s, you've barely got any experience, what do you know? And I had already gone in with that, knowing that, not to patronize these people, because a lot of the members were a lot more experienced than me. And I just said to them, look, I feel uneasy about this as well. You know, it's not something that hasn't been through my head a million times before standing up and presenting to you, my peers, and I respect and trust you. And actually, I need your support to get this branch back up and running properly, doing great events and promoting the profession. Some of the people that heckled me back then are some of my closest friends today. That's when my career really exploded with them by my side.
Interesting, because it seems that when you've had obstacles that are in your way, whether, like you said, it's the people heckling you or just trying to get the opportunity or seeing an opportunity and trying to take it, what you've done is you've asked for help.
I didn't want to be a showy offy person. I wasn't all about kind of glamour and things like that. It was simply about having a really great career and being part of what I already considered back then a profession. And it was recognised by employers by and large back then as a profession. It was called the secretarial profession. You'll probably remember all that, but it was, you know, recognised by government, recognised by employers, the secretarial diplomas. So it was, I think it was helping us all to have a bit of a sense of ownership, really. But it was really important that it's someone young and inexperienced, you didn't go in there with all this, not ego, I think is the word I'm looking for.
So do you think that your sense of it being a profession from such an early point in your career had a big impact on how you led yourself through your career as an assistant?
Yeah. I wanted to be a secretary from the age of 12. Lots of people, I knew university wasn't an option. It was off the table for a woman like me, and from the background I was from, there was my teacher said to me, you're not going to amount to anything. That's what a lot of kids had back then. So I had that, but I'd already decided I wanted to be a secretary. I'd had influences in my life at that point that had started to lead me down that path. But back then, it was presented, when we saw the kind of careers advisors at secondary school, it was presented to us as a professional career option. And when you saw the job advertisements in London or anywhere else in the UK, it'd always say on them, we need this typing speed, we need RSA or OCR or LCCI private. There wasn't much talk about degrees back then, but there was a certain level of standard that employers could expect from the people they employed that had got those qualifications. Yeah. And so from my mind, and what was promoted to me, and it was that this was a profession I was entering, a really robust one that added a lot of value. When I noticed it start, people starting to see it in a different light, was around the global financial recession. And that's when the change happened, that suddenly we were seen as very, very disposable workforce. That people were then asking for degrees, that you had to have a degree. It didn't matter if you'd had 20 years secretarial experience, you had to suddenly have a degree. Things changed. And, you know, some of the articles that were coming out in the press about us then, they just didn't paint us in a very, very good light at all. And so we'd, some of this professionalism stuff, as I call it, started to slip.
That is when things started to change in just so many different areas of the profession.
Mm.
Very, very difficult point.
It was shocking. Mm. Yeah, I mean, it, literally, you've gone from being respected in the workplace. And a lot of EAs would have had sort of access to some sort of learning and development, to then, oh, you're disposable, we don't need you, or no, we're not including you as part of the learning and development stuff that we found a little bit easier to get prior to 2008, suddenly was taken off the table. And then you were fighting for your professional worth, in a sense. That's certainly the vibe that was in the industry back then. But then the Hayes part of my career was huge. It just snowballed. But I was a real part of that team. I had a seat at the table. You know, I was assertive. I was also very open about what I, the areas I was weak in that I needed to develop. I am always aware of that. I was working in head office in the PLC part and doing the global stuff. But then my role diversified a lot, because one of the reasons Hayes liked my background is by that point I had a very, very good networking book of contacts.
All recruiters will appreciate that.
Oh yeah, and they sure did. And you know, they said, look Vic, do you want to get a little bit more involved with Hayes PN secretarial? The MD of 20 years of that brand, Jeff Sims, back then, I already knew Jeff anyway. We had a great relationship. So he's like, Vic, you know, come and see what's what and get involved in some of the Hayes PN secretarial. So we were starting to develop more events for the clients and candidates, so we could be more visual face-to-face in front of them, giving them a bit of a different perception to what was out there. But I was talking about the collective voice with you earlier, Hen, and I do think about my own career. It's not selfish for any EA to have that track mind.
No.
But when I got to Hayes, they said to me in my interview, yeah, there's lots of stuff here for PAs, because I'd never worked in a company with so many PAs before. And that was one of the draws as well. Hey, oh my God, they've got all these PAs there. Finally, I'm going to have some peers around me that I can actually work with day to day. And they said, yeah, there's lots of learning and development, blah, blah, blah. I got in there was nothing. I mean, literally, I spoke to a lot of the Hayes PAs. I ran a kind of little mini survey with them and said, look, I'm a good external networker. Do any of you belong to these associations, networks? Do you read these magazines? Have you read this book? Nothing. They weren't even invited to Hayes's own client candidate events.
No way.
Yeah, they weren't there. They weren't invited. I think one or two of them went along because it was part of their job to set it up. But at that point, we had around 50 EAs and PAs in the UK business. So I'm sitting there thinking, okay, I'm a good external networker. I went to James and said, can I set up an internal network for the Hayes PAs and EAs? I think we need it. This is what I found from chatting to a lot of them.
Mm.
And he said, well, I'm happy for you to take this forward. There's no budget for it at the moment. But he said, go and, you know, get heads together with Sue Pope, who was the chairman's EA. So we sat together and said, right, let's send an email out to all the Hayes EAs. Firstly, we need a distribution list. I mean, seriously, let's just say, would you like to get together as a group?
Mm-hmm.
And then what can we do as an internal network? And it just went whoosh. I mean, seriously, we brought the PAs down to London head office. We got a guest speaker in because I wanted them to get more of an outside view as assistants of what other assistants were doing. So I brought in an EA called Lee Thompson-Passard, and Lee was EA to the chairman of BP. And she'd also started up the kind of BP internal network. So I got her to come in and talk about her career, give them some inspiration about what you could do with your career. I told them my story, but I wanted to hear it from them to hear it from outside as well. So suddenly we had these lunch and learn sessions every other month. And it was a bit of kind of to the bosses, you have to support your PAs to come to this. Mm-hmm. And we got really quite pretty good engagement on that. And then we decided to do an internal conference, a one-day internal conference. And that was to take all the PAs out of the business, bring them down to London, have lots of different speakers, and like kind of like what we do with PA conferences now. But my boss, interestingly, said, Vic, why don't you and the Hayes PAs all kind of invite 5 or 6 PAs each that you deal with from our clients or top candidates that we're really trying to help? Invite them along. Explain to them it's an internal event, so there'll be some Hayes stuff, but a lot of the sessions are relevant to them. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And that became the Hayes PA conference. And that became the biggest PA conference still to date in the UK. It ended up growing to 250 people. And we had speakers from all over the world. We were the first people to start bringing speakers over from an international viewpoint. It just became like this sought after ticket.
Then I wonder when you decided to finish, because we've never spoken about this, but when you decided to sort of transition out of being a full-time assistant, given everything that you had achieved and how much pleasure it sounds like you got from the challenges and the community in and the really embracing all these different things that had happened to you and opportunities that you'd taken, how was it when you just, how did it feel when you decided to step out of that?
If I'm being honest to your listeners, I was partly heartbroken. So the context to EPA, I had 7 and a bit years at Hayes, which was far longer than I thought I was going to stay there. My little plan was we'll do 3-4 years in corporate tops and then I'm out of here. but I had such a great career there. They made it, there was so much variety, so much to get involved in that the years just whizzed by. You know, in that 7.5 years, we'd run that internal network really successfully. We, you know, brought our PAs together with our own clients and candidates so that we were all on this collective journey together. We'd won awards for PA Employer of the Year, which Hayes was gobsmacked about. You know, I won a couple of awards myself back then. I was judging, speaking all over the world. It was just such a crazy, crazy time, but I loved every minute of it. But about 18 months before I left Hayes, two of the industry associations and institutes we had, they both collapsed within about 2-3 months of each other, I think it was. And I was predominantly back then a member of APA, which was the Association of Personal Assistants run by Dr. Gareth Osborne. And, you know, even though I already had a secretarial diploma, I did the APA diploma as well and kind of got stuck in a bit there. And Gareth, due to ill health, obviously they had to shut down the association. It was a massive shock for the industry back then because Gareth came at this whole kind of PA professional development and positioning of the role from a very different stance to what had happened before. And the reason being is because he'd been a CEO of organisations. So he was coming at it from the leadership perspective. He totally got the role, but he said some really interesting things as well, that sometimes I think the EPA is your own worst enemy. You're stopping the industry, that whole perception piece, from moving on yourselves. And he wasn't attacking us. He had some really good kind of stuff to back it up back then. And even I had to bite my tongue in and said, you're right. but that went, and then what was I am back then, they went into liquidation with the then owners. And I didn't think much of it. I was really sad. I thought, well, what's going to happen now? We don't really have a UK professional body, nothing. And I started getting emails into my inbox, and it started off with about 10 to 15. Then it got to over 300. And the emails were kind of all along the same lines of, come on, Vic, when are you going to do it? And I'm sat there thinking, what? Me set up the next national body? And they were like, well, yeah, I mean, you've built this kind of profile in the industry, you've networked all around the UK. I was a Londoner, but I was all about, I'm British, and I mean, it's all about going to around the UK. I was getting emails from Scotland, the Channel Islands, I mean, everywhere saying, we think you should take it forward. And I'm thinking, how the hell am I going to do this? I still love being an EA. It's going to be a small business, which I'm actually petrified of running. It needed investment. You cannot start up an association without no money. And then I spoke to my now husband, who I've been with a couple of years back then, and I said, this is what's happening. They're asking me to do it. What do you think? And he said, well, I always knew you were going to do it. he always had this massive, he always has done, had this massive sense of belief in me. You know, he's one of my biggest champions. He came to a lot of PA events with me. It got to the point actually where they were saying, why isn't Martin here? But he said, no, totally, I'm backing you 110%. But I didn't have much in the way of assets. I had a tiny bit of savings, but not enough to set up an association. And so he said, well, you've got your flat, which I'd worked really hard. I was a homeowner by then. I mean, literally blood, sweat and tears. I had second jobs on top of my PA roles to get that money together. But we then had some equity in the flat. And we decided, or I did, was going to sell my flat, release the equity out of it, go back into the rental market, which is where I still am now. Mm-hmm. We moved just outside of London to the Surrey border, and we gave pretty much all of that to EPA and the profession. I liquidated every asset I had basically to start this association up. And I realised that from my granddad having been a business person that, you know, some people do start up businesses with no money, nothing, and they're really, really successful. But this needed to be done properly. I felt really conscious of what had happened to Gareth from, you know, and health-wise, and why the association had gone. I didn't want to do it straight away. So I spoke to the who I was working for at Hayes, and I just said, look, guys, I think I'm probably going to leave. This is what I'm being asked to do by our own candidates and clients and my network. And I had a really, really good discussion with them. And I had the longest exit route ever for the PAs, had 18 months. So we phased me out over 18 months. They were fully on board with what I was doing. What I did say to them, though, is I can't have you involved with EPA when I get going initially, because a client had said to me, Hen, I don't know whether you've ever had this before, but I felt a little bit unnerved about it. But he said, you're so Hayes that if I ripped you open, there'd be a million H's running out and bleed blood. Like, you are part of your big brand, part of the Hayes brand, especially the PA sex side. And in one hand, that was a compliment, but setting up EPA, it was like, I've got to detach
from that. Yeah.
My Hayes brand, it's got to be two separate things. So I had to really walk to cut that completely to be able to do it on my own. So yeah, we moved back into rental. You know, Martin's had a really difficult life like me and the whole homeless aspect. We were just genuinely happy to have a roof over our head. But what we didn't plan, we launched at the beginning of 2016. It was a lot of hard work, a lot of pain. I'd not long lost Susie. I was going through a lot in my personal life as well, which ended up in the national press. There was so much going on. It was just unreal. But we launched. And I thought, well, this will be the new start. What we didn't bet on was the whole Brexit debate. So the referendum, I didn't know which way the country was going to vote. And I didn't think it was really going to impact us because we're all about the UK. But sadly, when that referendum and voting out, it was an immediate impact on our business because, again, redundancy started to be made because employers were starting to plan for some sort of economic meltdown because that's what all the press were saying.
Yeah.
So we were back to 2008 again with lots of PAs being made redundant, budgets being cut, no one's paying out for L&D. You know, there was so much going on for PAs back then, it just felt awful. And after everything we'd done to come through that global recession, to go back there again. So we had to fund a lot of memberships, our own, you know, my own members' development, because they were just on the floor. We slashed our membership fees by 50%. I then, there was stuff that we wanted to achieve with EPA, the PA said they really needed, but it needed funding. And so I went back to the city and worked as an EA to the CEO of a specialty and insurance broker. And for 2 years, I worked for a fantastic guy called Chris Barnard. And I, again, landed on my feet. Totally different boss to what I'd had before. Sorry, director. He was fabulous. They really, really enjoyed it. But they, Ed Broking, really, really supported EPA. I mean, I had EPA stuff in, like, a whole cupboard full of EPA stuff so I could go off and do the events. You know, if I needed to take time off to run the conferences and training courses, they were fully behind me. I won a major award when I was there, and I'd only been there a couple of months. It was my mentor that had nominated me for the top 30 women in the City of London. And I'm sitting there thinking, what? Yeah. And I was like, the only someone from a support background that had been nominated for that. And I was absolutely shocked that they made a massive deal out of it there. So we're so proud of it. I'd only been there a couple of months. It had a massive impact on my personal professional life. I was working 7 days a week. We didn't get any time off. There was never a day that I could just go and sit there, veg out, watch Netflix, and because I was paying our rent and our bills, and then I was paying to keep the association running as well whilst maintaining these rock bottom fees, which were barely covering anything. But we were trying to, you know, it was a bit of a mistake in hindsight, but I was genuinely trying to do my best to acknowledge what was going on with PAs, knowing that they still wanted to belong to this association, but they couldn't afford very much. You know, salaries were starting to drop for PAs then as well, so we were dealing with that on top of it all. And I love being back in the city, but I felt a little bit weird, Hem, because here I am the CEO of a national body, and I'm still an EA to a CEO, financially supporting my members and trying to keep my own head above water. Yeah. I was just like, whoa, my head was just spinning. But we still achieved quite a lot. It was, you know, it was really quite interesting. A couple of months after I started Ed, we had a really fantastic conference with public sector EAs and PAs, and we did it in Whitehall. And I remember back then, you'll know, Hen, that a lot of the training was pitched towards private sector and corporate EAs. And it is different working in the public sector. So we did this special conference just for public sector that was held at the Department of Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy. And we had PAs from across Whitehall, local authorities from the country, you know, all different types of public sector organisations. And we had Peggy Grande, who was former EA to President Ronald Reagan. We had the fantastic Adam Fidler, had all different speakers, a panel. You know, we had PAs from the Royal Household who attended. It was a fantastic day. And yet I've taken the day off work and here I am running a massive conference. You know, even Theresa May, who was the Prime Minister back then, she'd sent her communications director from Number 10 to attend some of it. The CEO of the civil service hot-footed it back from Manchester from a meeting to come and say a few words. I mean, it was mammoth for us in terms of the profession, the people that were there. But then I'm literally inside, I'm exhausted because I'm doing this and then going back to work as an EA. You can sit there and moan about these things, or you can think, well, I've still got something big I want to achieve for this profession in the UK. I've worked really hard for this. I haven't popped up on social media out of nowhere.
Yeah,
I've really focused on my networking and business relationships with EAs for nearly 20 years now. It's been hard graft, a lot of it without social media because I was around before. And so, yeah, to me, the sacrifice was worth it, the working 7 days a week, never having much of a personal life, missing bits with my family. The PAs and EAs were still worth that pain, if that makes sense.
Mm. Yeah.
I never had much of an income out of EPA because we were always diverting. We were starting to pick up in a big way then after I came out of Ed. We knew I needed to be back on it full time, but didn't have I couldn't get a massive salary. I was barely earning the minimum wage. As a CEO, it's tough running a small business, and I've never shied away from that or made out that I've got this jet set lifestyle because I don't. But I was always happy. I thought, well, if I'm covering my rent and bills, I'm happy. You know, I'll find my, you know, what I want to do and stuff personally. But My husband got hit with a massive bout of mental health not long after our wedding, and he really seriously dipped. He was very mentally unwell for a few months, and so we lost his income. And I thought, okay, right, well, EPA's really starting to pick up speed now, but we need to invest this membership money into doing this, hiring these trainers. We can't necessarily take it for ourselves. And I looked at what was going on back then. There was no remote PA roles. It didn't seem quite feasible to set up as a VA because that was another small business and you need headspace to do that. And I didn't have the headspace. What I was looking for actually was quite a part-time mundane admin role that I could just go and do with my eyes closed, use that money to pay the rent and bills, and then still be able to run EPA and spend a big chunk of my week doing that. But there was no remote roles. There was no part-time roles. You were on a hide into nothing. We're on the cusp of London. It was just like pulling teeth. And then this role came up at Sainsbury's, the supermarket. And it was for the online team as an online assistant. And the hours from 4 a.m. until 8 a.m. You could either do 3 or 5 mornings a week.
Perfect.
And I'm thinking, this is not bad money. Like, it was actually the hourly rate, Hen, was paid more than what PAs are paid locally around. Okay, so the hourly rate was more than I would have got paid doing any admin or PA role part-time around here. And I was like, whoa, that means I can be home for 8:30. It's a clock-in, clock-out job. And then I can get on with running EPA. It just seemed perfect. And it was. It was very ironic, and I know I've talked to you about this before, you know, putting on a uniform. I worked at Tesco's years ago doing the night shift on top of a roll. I've never shied away from hard work and doing whatever jobs I need to do to survive. I've often had a second job on top of some of my earlier PA roles to pay the mortgage. But there was a real novelty to it. You clock in, you tap in your number, you have that uniform on, you do what needs to be done, you have a giggle and a laugh because you have to in these places.
Yeah.
There was music pumping out around the store through the night, you know, then we'd clock off and go home, have a cup of coffee, 30 minutes sleep, and then we'd get on with EPA and doing what I really wanted to do. And this wasn't long before COVID. You know, I'm working away at Sainsbury's. I've started to tell a few people, but knowing how judgmental people can get in the UK about those sort of jobs, although they won't be doing that anymore, I'm sure. But back then, it was still, you know, supermarket workers. And my husband was really frightened. He said, what if a member sees you in Red Hill coming out with that uniform on? He said, Vic, I'm proud of you. I don't mind you doing it, but you know what other people are like. And I said, I don't care. We've got rent and bills to pay, and I'll do whatever's necessary in order for me to keep running EPA and providing for the members and paying our own bills. Mm-hmm. So I was quite headstrong about it. And I ended up being one of their best workers on the team. Always work hard in every job I do. And I made some really good friends there. It was a really good vibe. The hours went quickly. And then we very quickly came into COVID and lockdown, and that is when I saw things as a key worker from a whole different perspective. But then EPA really started exploding again, so we did a free virtual conference in April last year. I remember talking to Adam Fidler just saying, oh god, this is going to get quite bad. It could get really bad for PAs and EAs. And this was about a week after lockdown started.
Yeah.
And I said, look, Adam, I think we've got to do something for the community in the UK. So we set up what I set up on behalf of EPA, a free 2-day conference. It was, even though we could have done with the funds, we couldn't charge PAs and EAs. We couldn't do it. It just wasn't appropriate. It was such a shocking time for all of us.
Yeah.
So we decided to do it thinking, oh, a couple of hundred people are attending. We had over 8,000 registrations.
Oh, God.
And so EPA then exploded. So I then had no choice but to hand in my notice at Sainsbury's. But with going on a good exit with them saying, Vic, anytime you want to come back here, you can. If you get a bit tight for money, come and work for us again. And we'll always have you back. So that was a really nice way to end that. I felt really proud to have been a key worker during this pandemic. I felt proud of being a small business owner battling on despite no support from the government. Mm-hmm. I think it's just, hopefully I've proved since we've been chatting, Hen, that it's just part of my makeup, but I've just got to get on with it. I've just got to keep going and going and going and do what needs to be done. But I was conscious I was letting some of the members down a little bit because I was exhausted. And, you know, I have a small team around me of volunteers and what have you. Mm-hmm. But COVID was exhausting for everybody, especially that first lockdown. Even if you weren't a key worker and working through the night like I was, it was just the whole emotion around it. And so I had a big discussion with my husband and we were like, do you know what, we're going to be pretty poor for the next year, but let's just crack on with you running EPA. You've got to be there for the members, you have to be. And that's what I've been doing ever since. Working flat out, rebranding the organisation.
Love it. And you think it's new heights, I'm sure.
Yeah, and you know, we're reinvigorating the male EAPA campaign that we are kind of pretty famous for. When we first started EPA, I didn't set up EPA willy-nilly. I had tons of focus groups of PAs from all around the country. And included in that were a lot of male assistants. So I was very aware, you know, from doing some of the Hayes events, why male PAs and EAs didn't come to events, that it was too feminised, that there was nothing enticing for them, there was nothing inclusive about the way our own industry and our own networks were promoting things to men.
Every man that I've interviewed on the podcast has mentioned your campaign and how important it was to them.
Yeah, and I think it was always in my mind when we started EPA, we had to do something about the male piece. And I don't think Hayes, we talked a lot about it at Hayes, we were very conscious, we knew what the split was.
Yeah.
But we didn't, people were still quite defensive about certain things. We wasn't really sure. And I mean, Jeff Sims said at the time, it was more something that a national body had to take on.
Yeah.
So, you know, I promised the male assistants that were in those focus groups, EPA was going to take charge of this. And we did some research around the world with other PA bodies, associations. Nobody was mentioning it. And yet you'd have these sessions at some of the PA conferences saying, here's a session on confidence for women, how to take charge your female brand. I mean, yeah. I couldn't believe it was all going on. Like, even I didn't want to attend some of this stuff as a woman because my counterparts couldn't.
No.
So we decided we very quickly, within a couple of months of EPA opening, I'm up on having a quick chat about EPA on a conference stage in London. And I said, look, you know, we're just about to introduce the first male EAPA campaign as a national body. In fact, over the world, nobody was doing anything. And it slipped off my tongue and I just said, it's not just a girl's job. And that was it. I didn't realise the impact it was going to have. Now, the background to that was, I was aware at the time the government was running a campaign called the Not Just a Boy's Job, and it was about getting girls into STEM professions. And I had a bit of criticism. There was an American trainer who emailed me saying, why are you talking about boys and girls, not just a girl's job? That's quite offensive. And I said, well, no, it's not, because in the British education system, we're told to start talking about careers from secondary school age. And we're not women then, we're girls. Mm. You know, certainly at 11 years old, I was a girl. And, you know, our education system is very different to the American one. So that it was a tongue-in-cheek thing that came out of my mouth, a play on the government's campaign, not just a boy's job. I didn't realize until a few hours later it had gone viral as a bit of a hashtag on Twitter. And then, you know, I had a couple of male assistants on my board anyway, and they were like, well, that's the campaign name, isn't it? And it just picked up from there. We did a survey with male EAs and PAs so that we could show the female PAs what was affecting them in our own profession, that actually this 96-4% split, it was 97-3% back then, was an issue. And that actually we as women, we want to see more women in leadership roles and things like that. I've always supported that, you know, with some of the organizations I work with, like We Are the City. Mm-hmm. But even We Are the City was saying, you know, you've got to look at what's going on in your own profession. And our profession was telling us that we didn't have enough men, that it wasn't an attractive career option even for boys. You know, some of our male assistants in the membership told us that when they were at school, and one of them had broached becoming a secretary, he was, you know, given a brochure about being a mechanic. So we knew we had a lot of work to do, and it did pick up a lot of speed quite quickly. We put out the research that we'd done, gave that to everybody. We got some press off the back of that, mm-hmm. and the HR industry started to take a bit of note of it, saying, you know, we started to talk to organisations, because another thing, and you would have noticed this, Hen, the job advertisements, they were so female worded. It was just unreal. I actually, looking back now, I feel embarrassed a little bit for our profession. We had job advertisements that were blatantly screaming out for female PAs. I had a little bit of resistance, I'm going to be honest with you, from a small group of female PAs and assistants in the UK. Said, Vic, you know, you should be supporting women. And I said, oh, of course I am. I'll always support women with where we need greater equality, but this is different. And if we want equality as women, then surely if we've got areas in the UK and professions that have got that split and where we're being too feminized, we've got to do something about it. That's equality.
Yeah. And it was so feminized, wasn't it? It is difficult, isn't it, if you think back sort of 10, 15 years, just the difference in terms of landscape. Thank goodness it is different. But you're certainly right about job adverts. And
it was horrendous.
And people would say, you know, just women in this job. And, you know, it was totally at odds with the law and what we were legally as recruiters allowed to do. But companies would just openly ask for it as if that was fine.
Well, I remember I've been involved in a lot of judging in PA EA awards over the years, a lot. And I remember one time we saw the first male assistant who was the runner up on the national. He was absolutely fantastic. I mean, it was the first time we'd seen a male assistant get that far in any kind of PA awards. And I remember being at a PA event and a PA saying to me, well, thank God he didn't win, because then men would have taken over our industry as well. And, you know, I realised that there was still this education piece that, wow, of course, we didn't want to offend women, but this was an issue just specific to our industry, and that there are men out there that are brilliant at this job. And we even had to get some of the terminology out of female PAs that, they'd be joking, saying, well, men can't multitask, that's why they don't do this role, ha ha. But we had all this bias coming out from our own profession, so we had to do stuff to start to drip feed it out and fix it, mm-hmm. and show that actually our male peers are our allies, they're with us by our side as fellow assistants. And I was really proud of the male assistants, because I had to cajole some of them to start coming to events. And I said, look, I'll take it up with some of the networks. You were saying earlier about taking up some difficult, that was because, you know, some of these leaders then suddenly really disliked me because I was having to call them out on stuff that they weren't happy about. I had to call out one of our trade shows, not the PA show, it was a different name back then, but they, part of one of the days on the trade show was a fashion catwalk. And there was never any male models in it. It was all females sashaying down in these corporate suits. And so you hit the nail on the head early on in this interview. Yes, I haven't been flavour of the month in our own profession. There are some people that positively dislike me because I have called them out. I have raised things that need to be raised. But it's all about professionalism for me, and all about inclusivity and all that. There's so much, you know, there's so many components to this whole bigger picture. But the male assistant thing, it's for me, it's been lovely to work with and watch it take on this life form as it on its own. Mm. We did two campaign videos as well.
Yeah, you know, I remember those.
We've been in the Financial Times with this. We've done, there was a hideous article in another national newspaper, but lots of other good press. But we've seen more male assistants going for awards now. We're seeing them come out more to events. You know, I'm really mindful of, I won't let any speaker on any of my programmes that says any nonsense like confidence for women or this for women.
Yeah.
You know, we've been able to work through EPA with organisations to help them change the terminology on how they promote PA roles out on the market. You know, we've worked with internal networks on helping them to gain that kind of trust with their own male assistants, get them brought into the internal networks. And it's fantastic. I think the male EAs and PAs, they put up with a lot for a long time and never said anything much because they were men. But now they've got a voice and a seat at the table as much as any of us. And as for this whole notion that men can't multitask, absolutely rubbish.
The notion that women are superior at a job because they're
women. And you know, the only female only thing I have promoted has been the We Are the City Rising Star Awards, because I do support female equality, of course I do, but that goes across professions. But the great thing about Vanessa and her team is that they have supported the Not Just a Girls Job campaign. We've been allowed to talk about it at the awards, where it's a room full of mostly women. The women involved and that have won those awards have helped us promote this out, so other people in other professions in the city and across the UK have been saying, actually, look, we've been at this female event, but did you know there's women in this profession? I think it's midwifery has got 98% female to 2% male. But there's a couple of professions like it, but the work continues, and we're going to rejuvenate the campaign this year. We wanted to do it last year, but COVID.
Yeah, and I see assistants' profiles on LinkedIn who have the hashtag as part of their profile.
Yeah, and do you know what? I'll always be really proud of working on that with the male EAs. I'll never apologise to anyone for raising that and it being awkward for our industry. You know, I noticed even like lots of recruiters were then starting to do blogs saying, oh, you know, we've noticed that there's so little male EOs, blah, blah. Everybody had a part to play in that, and they still do. Now, we have spoken to some male assistants very recently, and they do feel some of the stuff that we've pulled up people 5 years ago has started to slip back into these feminized training sessions and things like that. So I think we're going to look at that whole inclusivity piece. We've got to look at the bias again. We have a partnership, EPA has a partnership with the Department for Education and NAS, and part of this campaign was to actually start to get in schools to make sure schools were putting it as a viable career option for boys. So we've had those discussions with them already, and so we hope to, you know, have some more depth to what we're doing there. But yeah, I'm really proud of my assistants. You've done a fantastic job in actually what has been at times difficult circumstances.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed it, please do share it with your networks so that other people can find out about Victoria's story and also about the Not Just a Girls Job campaign. I am going to be back next week with another guest. It is going to be the last episode of this series. And I know that you're going to really enjoy that one too. So have a fantastic week. Don't forget to follow us on social media, Assistants Together, all over the place, and have a great week. Take care.